been keeping up with the entries into this year's Eurovision Song Contest, have we? Well then, you're probably aware that the entrant for Sweden has been decided, with Loreen winning the final playoff in the Globen last Sunday with Euphoria and singing up a snowstorm using English lyrics. Nothing new, since English is just so much part of the linguistic landscape in Sverige, the effects of which being the topic for Lingua Franca this week. English, though, is apparently the elephant in the room when it comes to the Language Act, introduced by the Swedish Ministry of Culture in 2009, defining and protecting five national minority languages, as well as stating that Swedish is the principal language in Sweden, a position of advocacy that the country has never before had the need of, and, nota bene, no mention of the constant presence of that other language, English. So let me introduce Katrin Norbe, Professor of Scandinavian Languages at Stockholm University in Sweden. A great analogy that you use, Professor Norbe, for the use of English in Sweden is its use in the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate, please?
Well, the Eurovision Song Contest has a history that goes back to the mid-50s, and to start out, there was no provision saying or any regulation about what language to use, because it was self-evident that the contestants would simply sing in their native language or the language of the country they were representing. And 5-6 years into the competition, suddenly one country used another language, namely English, and this country was Sweden. And that led to a change of the rules, that you actually had to sing in your native language or the language of the country you were singing for. And then they've changed the rules again, so that in 1974, when ABBA, the Swedish rock group or pop group, won in Brighton with their song Waterloo, they sang it in English. So there has been a change of what language to use. And then they went back a few years later to sing in your native tongue. And then now it's been changed again. So it's a barometer or something, if you like, to some sort of language policy in practice, I would say.
Well, people always comment how good Swedes are in English. And Swedes learn it from an early age. It's increasingly necessary in the education stakes, the higher the degree of tertiary education, especially in the sciences. And there's an extremely positive, perhaps even exaggerated, regard for English. Surveys indicate that being good at English is indeed part of the Swedish national identity. And you quote survey findings that Swedish high school students even rated English as more adapted to modern society than Swedish, and more beautiful. What can be meant by that, do you think?
Well, these figures and these results, they come from a dissertation by Lee Oakes, an Australian, who wrote his thesis on national identity in Sweden and in France. So he compared those two countries, and in many ways there are similarities in the structures, let's say, centralized structures, really, but in attitudes towards the native language, French or Swedish, there are quite stark differences. So these things that you mention here, those are results from what the Swedish high school students said. So it all shows a very positive attitude towards English. And it's not a very, this is not an isolated finding. So there are several other studies that have found similar results. So the idea of being good at English, to be able to communicate, be at ease in English, seems to be something that is regarded very highly. At the same time, I would say, though, that there is another discourse in society as well, where people would say, well, yes, we are good at English, but we're not as good as we think we are, and that it's deceptive that Swedes believe they know more than they actually do.
And people who are aware of that or who have that view are even better at English than the average Swede, because they know that.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about the idea, though, that that English is even more beautiful than Swedish? What do you think that means?
Well, we have to bear in mind that these are questionnaires with 16, 17-year-olds, and probably I would say that young people in general, this study is 10 years old now, but I would say that it still holds, have a very positive view of English. It's tied to modernity, popular culture. It's seen as urban, cool, all those things. Whereas Swedish could be more of tradition. This is what your parents do. This is what all the old people do. And it could be a bit of an alluring thing to think English is the ticket to success.
Right. Well, you yourself, you admit, are surprised by how much commercial advertising is in English. Even the word for a sale, sale in Swedish, has completely given sway to the English term.
I was a bit surprised because I did a little field trip into a big shopping centre in Stockholm about a month ago to just document signs of English. This is something that's become quite, let's say, a popular thing to do within linguistics in recent years, to document signage, language use in the streetscape, often in bilingual societies. And I was quite surprised to find that there was that much English. So I went around this shopping center that has about 80 stores or so. It happened to be around the time of the winter sale. And I was surprised to see that, I would say, 4 out of 5 signs had the English word for sale rather than the Swedish rea.
That was in Stockholm?
That's right.
Would it be the same in other cities, do you think, or is Stockholm a little bit more internationalized?
Well, it's a bit more internationalized, certainly, but overall, many of those stores would be chain stores, so they would be present across the country, and it's probably just part of a marketing image. But what is a bit surprising is that not only that you find, well, signs with the word sale, because that's easy enough, but in some cases, actually, much more contents-based messages where you actually need to have a certain ability in English to be able to follow the message. So clearly that must rest upon an assumption that people can handle that, because otherwise these companies wouldn't sell their wares.
So you mean hard information, like
that's
what
right.
something's yeah. made out of, fittings
or,
and
that's
sizes?
That's right. Or, for instance, in one store there were big signs on the walls. This was selling jeans, and about sizes and what would fit what kind of body shape and measurements, etc. And that was completely in English. So that's something different from just, well, using English to promote a sale and maybe have a few catch phrases in English.
In another study, it was found that code switching occurred at the extremely high rate of once per minute. Can you explain that?
This is from a study by a colleague at Stockholm University, Harriet Sharp, from English Studies. And she also, again, this was based on data with the young people, so adolescents. And it's probably something of a symbolic switch to suddenly shift into English for a few phrases, a catchword, etc., and then back to Swedish. So it's some English material that has been inserted in a Swedish frame, if you like. And I would say that, and this study is from 2001, and my not so, let's say, scientific investigation of riding on the underground every day to work, and of course, as a linguist, you tend to eavesdrop and listen to others. I would say this is something that's extremely common, and not only with young people. You do find more and more English, I'd say, also in these kind of private conversations.
And then it isn't just a small group of set phrases that get sprinkled through it, like cool and...
No, it would be that as well, quite a lot of that. But it would also be sometimes, which is quite strange, the response particle, yes, in English is actually used quite a lot, but it's used a bit differently in Swedish, which is interesting in
What's
a way.
What's the difference?
Well, it's used like this, yes, with emphasis. It means, all right, of course, yes, that's what we're going to do. So it has a very specific meaning.
Oh, well, that's actually a direct borrowing then of that meaning.
That's because, right.
Mm, well, it indicates then that English has so penetrated Swedish society that Swedes can't do without it.
Well, I think they can, actually. I think so. It's a bit of a worry in some quarters where people think that English is going to take over. I don't think there are any signs of that, actually. I think it's true that young people use a lot of English, but in this 18th century, people used a lot of French. The whole royal court spoke French, and German was a very strong influence a bit earlier as well. So most of the discourse or the discussion over the last decade or so, and also what led up to the Language Act, the Swedish Language Act, has to do with, well, what has been seen as a risk of English taking over in certain domains, certain areas in society, in particular in higher education, in research, and also a fear that this somehow would spread from one area to the next. So if it starts in research and higher education and then advertising, technology, what have you, and then finally you're in a situation where Swedish is relegated to the private domain and more of a private language. And of course, then you could see that language death is on the horizon. I mean, that's a very exaggerated scenario, and we're nowhere near anything like that. But I think there are certain, in the discussions, there are little seeds of this where people see that we need to take action now. So that's a rationale for having language legislation. Mm. So I think there is this discussion ongoing, of course, and that has fueled the discussion behind the Language Act as well.
Yeah. Well, one effect that you seem to indicate this widespread influence of English or usage of English might have had is how well or the degree to which Swedes understand their Scandinavian neighbours, which is apparently less than it once was.
Yes, it's a pity. That's my personal view. It's a pity if we lose this ability.
Mm. So we're talking then Swedish, Danish, Norwegian?
That's right. So those would be the three main Scandinavian languages. And of course, it will also include the Swedish-speaking minority in Finland as well. And the fantastic thing about this, of course, is that you can use your own native language and talk or read or communicate in one medium or the other with your neighbours. But there are signs that younger people, in particular, are not as good at communicating across the borders like this and resort to English instead, at least initially. I think that's an important thing to make clear here, that people might think initially that, yes, it's easier to speak English, but as you keep communicating and maybe you spend time in the other environment, you will find that it probably is easier to resort to your own language because you have a different depth and understanding and knowledge, vocabulary items in a different way than you would in English. In most cases, it would be like that.
On how the Swedes are becoming less Scandinavian and more Anglified in their language habits, Katrin Norve is Professor of Scandinavian Languages at Stockholm University in Sweden, but was in Australia recently where she presented a talk for the 10th anniversary colloquium of the Research Unit for Multilingualism and Cross-Cultural Communication at Melbourne Uni. I'm Maria Zylstra, inviting you to check the Lingua Franca website for more information.